hard to believe the drama is over. Tragedy struck downtown this morning.
Hej och välkomna till Dennis värld. Nu är jag tillbaka igen. Det är den 1 december. Alltså 1 december. Och snart är det jul. Och den första luckan i adventskalendern är öppnad. Jag har ingen adventskalender. Men jag tror att väldigt många där ute kanske har en. Tillsammans med barnen, om de har barn vill säga. Ja, vilket fall som helst. Det är inte långt kvar till julen och jag hoppas ni har varit snälla här under året så att ni får lite presenter. Får se om jag får några. Nej, det tror jag inte. Jag har inte varit snäll. Jo, faktiskt har jag varit snäll. Du, jag känner mig lite så här blä, lite skit rent ut sagt. Ont i halsen har jag. Jag har varit förkyld där och varit sjuk under en längre tid. Men det har gått upp och ner. Ena veckan känner jag mig bra och sen blir jag dålig igen. Och så får jag lite feber och hosta. Och jag vet att det är många som jag känner som har åkt på någon slags, om det är en covid av någon variant kanske, som är lite mildare då. Men det verkar inte släppa. Det är det som är jobbigt. Så man går och harklar sig lite väl ofta tycker jag. Och nej, vi har haft otur här i familjen. Vi har åkt på det här nu. Jag tror det är bara några månader, 3 gånger någonting. Men det är bara gilla läget som sagt. Vad jag kan inte göra så mycket mer än att försöka äta sunt och leva sunt och röra på mig. Och, ja, det är det som är viktigt att ha ett liv som är fyllt med roliga saker. För det försöker jag med faktiskt. Jag försöker på alla sätt och vis fylla dagarna med intressanta projekt. Det är vad jag gör om dagarna. Och sen är det inte alltid så lätt. Man får inte alltid som man vill heller. Men det är så med livet. Men som sagt, julen är snart och sen snart kommer vi in i ett nytt år också. 2024. Vad har 2024 att erbjuda oss? Vad drömmer ni om? Ja, då kan man ju säga direkt, jag vill ha fred. Jag har fred i världen. Ja, det vill nog alla. Det tror jag. Men egentligen, vad är det man vill med 2024? Jo, jag vill att 2024 ska vara ett år för mig åtminstone som jag känner mig frisk. Och känner att de projekt jag håller på med går åt rätt håll. För jag måste säga, det har varit riktigt, riktigt illa när det gäller våra projekt. Alltså vi har haft sån otur och det tar aldrig slut. Och man kan ju undra ibland, hur kommer det sig att jag har sån jäkla otur? Det är märkligt det där. Och då undrar ni säkert kanske, ni som är nya här och inte har lyssnat, vad pratar han, vad då för projekt? Ja, jo, det är en hel del projekt jag har hållit på med under åren. The Baltic Sea Anomaly vet ni om kanske. Det här föremål vi hittar i Östersjön. Ja, varför har vi inte kommit vidare med det? Bla, bla, bla och så vidare. Och det där var det strömmar in mejl hela tiden. Varje dag i stort sett. Eller på Messenger. Vad händer? What's the next step regarding the Baltic Sea Anomaly? Vad händer? Vad händer? Ska ni ta upp det? Det är bara att dyka ner och ta upp det. Ja, jag önskar att det var så lätt. Nej, men det käppar hjulen för det där projektet. Sen det här med ubåten, ja, det känner ni till sen förut kanske. Vi hittade en ubåt utanför Grisslehamn. Som vi skulle bärga 2022 var tanken, i maj då. Men som sagt var februari 2022 drog kriget igång. Och det var spiken i kistan för hela projektet. som vi hade lagt ner en jädrans massa tid på och en jäklans massa pengar också. Och det kändes jäkligt surt. Och sen började vi det här konjak och benediktin från ett vrak ute i Östersjön, norr om Åland. Som skulle säljas då på Christie's. Och så hade vi pandemin som gjorde att intresset blev vakt, eller det fanns i stort sett inget intresse. Ja, det sket sig det också. Och så hade vi det här vinet då som vi skulle sälja på Christie's. Som är världens äldsta drickbara vin. Alltså världens äldsta drickbara vin. Japp. Alltså ett vin från 1670 som vi hade på ett vrak i Nordsjön. Så att det skulle vi ju sålt på Christie's i London, men det var ju samma sak där, intresset var vakt och nej, inga större bud sådär, så att det var ingenting som vi nappade på. Vi har ingen lust att skänka bort grejerna heller när man har lagt ner så mycket pengar och tid på saker. Så att vi har haft jäkligt mycket otur och vi är precis inne i en sån där otur hela tiden. Nu har vi otur med ett annat projekt som vi håller på med. Som är ett gigantiskt projekt. Och jag vill inte gå in i detalj vad det handlar om, varför vi har otur med det. Men vi har otur uppenbarligen hela jäkla tiden. Så min önskan 2024 nu är att helt enkelt det ska bli slut med alla otur. Otursår. Otursdagar. Det ska vända och gå framåt och ja, vi ska lyckas. Alltså lyckas få till det. Få saker och ting att bli bra till slut. Att det blir ett bra avslut på någonting man har påbörjat. Det är vad jag önskar med 2024. Oj, nu small det här, vet du varför? Jo, bara för att det ramlar ner snö ifrån taket. Och dra åt helskotta, det vibrerar i hela huset. Det är nämligen så att taket här ovanför mig har ju säkert 30-40 cm snö på. Och det åkte ner nu. Så att jag blev lite skraj. Ja, nej men som sagt var, 2024 hoppas jag blir ett år som kommer att skapa förutsättningar till att det kommer lyckas och att vi lyckas och att jag får hålla mig frisk och att vi helt enkelt får en bra framtid framför oss. För att 2023, 2022 är ända tillbaka till, ja, jag ska nog gå tillbaka till 2012 när det gäller vissa projekt så har vi misslyckats. Alltså vi har haft så mycket otur så att det finns inte på kartan. Visst, vi har satt rubriker runt om i världen i media. Vi har lyckats ändå hitta saker och ting som ingen annan har hittat. Men alltid är det på något sätt att avsluten blir åt helskotta. Fel. Det blir misslyckade avslut. Ja, det är... Ja. Jag kan sitta hela tiden och hålla på och spåna och om det här och grubbla på det och prata om det. Men det gör inte saken bättre. Jag försöker verkligen samla energi här nu för 2024 och göra det bästa möjliga utav det året. Och skapa en plattform för 2025, 26, 27 och framåt i tiden. Där jag kommer lyckas med det jag verkligen brinner för. Jag har många projekt på G. Panama är ett utav dem. Men sen håller jag även på med att... jag har ju blivit en liten poddare här nu. Jag gillar det här med podderi. Jag var skeptisk i början. Det var en del som tjatade på mig. Dennis, ska du inte dra igång en podd? Jag menar, du har ju varit med så mycket och du gillar ju snacka, bla bla bla, sådär. Ja, varför inte, så här. Ah, kanske inte. Ja, till slut så gjorde jag ju det. Jag tog det här klivet och skaffa den här micken. Eller skaffa. Jag snodde den från min dotter. Så här, du, Denise, kan jag få låna din mick? Vad ska du med den till? Ja, men jag ska börja podda. Ja, men pappa, hallå, seriöst. Jo, men vad, det fixar jag nog, vet du. Jag ska prova en gång i alla fall. Och vem ska lyssna på dig, typ? Nej, så sa hon inte. Men det jag kände att jag testar och ser om det är någonting som funkar. Om det är någon som vill lyssna på mig. Jag kan väl säga så här att jag har kört min podd i drygt ett år nu. Och jag fick från Spotify fick jag en gratulation. Och jag får det faktiskt lite rätt ofta faktiskt. Om att jag är på topp. I topplistan och att jag har varit på topplistan i 5 veckor i rad och jag bara, vad fanken, vad är det som, hur kommer det sig att jag har så många lyssnare? Jag menar, lyssnar folk på mig överhuvudtaget? Gör de det? Men uppenbarligen så gör ju folk det. Spotify är en av de här plattformarna jag är med i. Sen fanns det ju massa andra plattformar tydligen som jag är med på. Apple och jag vet inte, det är en hel del i alla fall, men vilket fall som helst tydligen så funkar ju det som jag pratar om, folk vill lyssna på mig. Och visst, absolut, jag är, hör och häpna nu, men jag är ja, ni kommer inte tro det, ni tror säkert att jag är så där mycket yngre nu än det jag kommer säga. Jag är 57, jag blir 58 här nu i mars nästa år. Helt galet. Jag känner mig absolut inte som en 57-åring. Jag känner mig fortfarande som en 30-35-åring. Det enda som är lite skillnad, när jag står där framför spegeln och sätter på mig brillorna, för nu mer måste jag ha glasögon så fort jag ska titta i telefon eller läsa en text. Det påminner en om att man börjar bli lite äldre. När jag sätter på mig brillorna där och tittar i spegeln, nej, men vad hände med den där unga, snygga killen? Ja, nej. Man blir äldre. Men som sagt, jag kommer alltid vara 30, 35, kanske 40 då, i planeten. Men jag älskar livet, det är ju det. Jag tycker livet är så fantastiskt. Vilken gåva vi har fått. Och det gäller ju då att ta vara på varenda dag man har. För att ingenting är givet. Det kan ta slut vilken dag som helst. Vilken dag som helst kan det bara ta slut. Det kan komma en istapp från taket bara pff, rakt in i planeten så är det slut där. Du kan bli överkörd av en bil. Du kan drabbas av en sjukdom som tar ditt liv. Eller du kan drabbas av en sjukdom som kan få dig att inte leva. Alltså det finns så mycket saker och ting som är eländiga och varje dag som man får andas och leva så är jag tacksam. Jag har det bra. Jag har 4 stycken barn. Den äldsta, han emigrerade, han drog till Australien för drygt 6 år sedan. 7 snart. Han tröttnade helt och hållet på Sverige och fann sin lycka där. Och nu är jag farfar också. Ja, det är helt otroligt att jag är farfar. Jag som fortfarande är sådär ung och jag är knappt pappa, höll jag på att säga. Jo, pappa är jag. Och nu är jag farfar. Men det är Australien. Och jag saknar min familj där så otroligt mycket så att det är svårt att förklara. Men det är livet. Det är en del av livet. Familjen, kärleken och saknaden som jag har då till min äldsta son som bor i Australien och mina barnbarn där. Det är svårt att sätta ord på det, men jag önskar ju verkligen att jag kan ta mig dit snart. Men det har varit så mycket elände, inflationen och allt som har hänt runt omkring som har gjort att vissa saker som är jätteviktiga för själen och som då att åka till Australien får vänta, för jag måste släcka bränderna som jag har här i Sverige. Jag måste lösa de här problemen. Jag får aldrig riktigt andas ut och bara, nu sätter jag mig på en flight och så åker jag till Australien och träffar min familj där. Nej, jag har inte den möjligheten. Jag måste brottas hela tiden med de här problemen som jag har i Sverige. Så att 2024 hoppas jag att det gör så att saker och ting vänder i mitt liv. Och jag hoppas att allt runt omkring oss blir mer positivt. Och självklart det här med krig och att det tar slut. Fy fan, det är så jävla eländigt. Jag menar, vem fanken vinner på krig? Det är ju alltid förlorare i krig. Man förlorar alltid i krig. Det finns inga vinnare. Och jag menar, mänskligheten har inte kommit så jävla långt när det gäller intelligens och förståelse uppenbarligen. Jävligt duktiga är vi på att utveckla AI och vi utvecklar det och vi utvecklar det och vi flyger och hej och hå. Men intelligensen och förståelsen och omtanken för andra människor och livet, det verkar ha stannat upp på stenålderstiden. Redan där. Men att det kommer längre. Jag bara pratar rakt ut nu. Hur jag känner och tycker. Jag tänkte, det här avsnittet då som jag håller på med just nu och spelar in, det kommer att handla lite om hur allt egentligen började. Och förutsättningen för då att för att ni ska kunna se det här, det är att ni har möjlighet att gå in på Spotify. För att det här är video. Så jag tänkte jag skulle visa filmen The Mystery Beneath. Och Mystery Beneath kom redan 2013 tror jag. Den spelades in 2012. Och under den tiden, under inspelningen, så det hände så otroligt mycket saker. Det var så intensivt och intressant samtidigt, men för oss då som explorers och entreprenörer och visionärer som vi är allihopa i det här gänget, så att komma in i fokus på filmfronten, om man säger, gör dokumentärer och har producenter och massa folk runt omkring och så säger så här, du Dennis, kan du inte göra det där istället, säg det på det sättet istället, kan du stå där, tänk på ljuset där, så blev det jäkligt nytt alltså. När vi är ute och jobbar med våra projekt, vi är ju inga producenter eller gubbar som är kameror som springer runt omkring oss och talar om vad vi ska göra. Vi jobbar ju bara för att det är det vi älskar och brinner för. Och sen fick vi med oss då ett gäng med människor som ville styra upp allting och tala om ungefär hur vi skulle göra hela tiden och säga och vara och in. Det var väldigt nytt för oss. Och förbannat intressant måste jag säga. Men jag tänkte nu att jag ska helt enkelt. Jag ska spela upp den här dokumentärfilmen. Har ni inte sett The Mystery Beneath förut, så kan ni få göra det här och nu på Dennis värld. Det är den första dokumentärfilmen vi gjorde. Sen efter den här dokumentären så har vi gjort massa andra dokumentärer med Nature Geographic, med Discovery och så även den andra utländska kanaler som har varit här och filmat. Men jag vet inte var de ligger någonstans ens. Det är så mycket som är gjort så att jag har ingen aning var det här contenten, filmerna finns någonstans. Men det roliga med Mystery Beneath, det är en lång story, jag tar en kort. Det roliga är att den gick ju hem uppenbarligen runt om i världen. Den var till och med i vissa flygbolags filmkatalog. Så när man satt där på ett flygplan och åkte någonstans utomlands eller var man nu åkte, så kunde man gå in i deras meny där och välja filmer som ni vet. Ja, ni fattar vad jag menar. Och då fanns den med där. The Mystery Beneath. Så jag tror att det är väldigt, väldigt, väldigt många som har sett den här runt om i världen. Men svenska kanaler. Jag menar TV4, 1, 2, 5, alla de här. Ingen har kört ut den här dokumentärfilmen. Och för mig är det jättemärkligt. Vi hittar det här föremålet i Östersjön. Och det blev en jättestor grej. Men ingen svensk distributör har kört ut den här filmen. Lite märkligt kan man tycka. Efter det vi hade gjort det där så var vi ute ett antal gånger till. Och vi spelade in en till dokumentär med Emil Marsak. Det gjorde vi redan 2019. Vi är ju rätt övertygade. Vi är i stort sett övertygade om att det vi hittade där 2011 är någonting som är konstruerat. Och det är inte bara det. Det är alla de här situationerna vi har varit inne i. Händelser på plats som har gjort att vi är övertygade om att det är någonting mycket, mycket märkligt som vi har hittat. Ja, vilket fall som helst. Jag tänker nu att jag vill helt enkelt bara visa den här filmen för er. Och så får ni gärna kommentera vad ni tycker och tänker. Om ni har några frågor så skriv gärna i kommentarfältet nedanför på Spotify. För att det är där ni kan se den. På de andra plattformarna kan ni inte se filmen. Så att det här är ju en video. Så att titta på det här nu. Och sen vill jag gärna höra vad ni känner och tycker. Vad ni tror. Var öppna. Öppna upp er. Vad tycker ni? Ja, jag säger klart slut ifrån mig. Och ha en riktigt underbar helg. Och titta nu på The Mystery Beneath från 2012-2013 med Ocean X Team. Ha det bra. Hej då.
In June of 2011, the Swedish wreck divers Peter Lindberg and Dennis Åsberg stumbled upon something no one could explain. Nearly 300 feet below the surface of the Gulf of Bothnia, the sonar suddenly showed an astonishing image. Down there in the cold, dark Nordic waters lay an anomaly, an object no one could identify. It was almost perfectly round, 180 feet in diameter, and it looked like a UFO. Now they're about to experience the adventure of a lifetime. They will embark upon an expedition in an attempt to find out what it was they saw that day.
They found what can only be described as the wreckage of a spaceship.
At first one wouldn't have an explanation for what this actually could be. It could be man-made.
What in helvete?
Allvarligt, som en häxring alltså.
You don't get any answers. You just get more questions.
It's an emotional roller coaster.
Du måste ju vara med där.
It's my planning and I am a bit anxious about it.
If anything happens, we're smoked.
You're fretting me and my kids.
My name is Peter Lindberg, and I am a professional treasure hunter. Treasure hunting for me is very much chasing the dream to find the long-lost wreck. It's a historical capsule, and no one has touched it. I'm not so much in diving on wrecks, which people already have investigated. That's no fun. The fun is to find something completely new. It's thrilling, and it's extremely fun.
more than 20 years of diving experience, Peter has taken part in many spectacular expeditions in the Baltic Sea. In 1997, he explored the wreck of the Jönköping, a Swedish merchant ship that sank in the First World War. The cargo hold contained well-preserved bottles of champagne, almost 100 years old. It turned out to be a substantial find. The bottles were auctioned off at Christie's for the record price of £2,200 a bottle. That was in 1998. Today, the collector's price is about 21,000 euros. Together with his friend and entrepreneur Dennis Orsberg, he started the deep sea exploration company, Ocean X Team.
What drives me is curiosity, and I have always been a curious guy, an explorer, and I want to find out new things. To find that thing that nobody else have found is some sort of long-term goal.
The territory for Dennis and Peter's expedition is centered in the Baltic Sea, high up in the north of Europe, off the coast of Sweden, and eight other bordering countries. Throughout history, many ships have been lost in these international waters. It has been said that the Baltic Sea and the Gulf of Bothnia hold more than 100,000 wrecks. A famous example is the Vasa, a Swedish warship that sank in the 1600s and was salvaged more than 300 years later. The hull was found to be almost completely intact. Since the inlet is narrow and the fact that rain, ice and snow are being discharged from the surrounding countries, the water is brackish, a mixture of fresh and salt water. The low salinity gives the Baltic Sea excellent conservation qualities for anything that sinks to the bottom. In the summer of 2011, the Ocean X team were on a routine expedition north of Åland. However, things didn't go as planned.
We had rented a old fishing vessel, which we used. And we had problem already from the beginning. The boat started leaking, and we had to find a dry dock in Finland to repair it, and, well, everything was just crazy.
Disheartened by the failed expedition, Peter has an idea.
On our way home, I knew that we would pass in an area where there were another wreck. So we put the equipment into the water and start searching, and well, it was less than an hour, I remember. This strange, odd thing just turned up on the monitor. My initial reaction when the circle turned up on the monitor was, "Hey guys, here we have a UFO."
I got goosebumps all over my body. I have never ever seen anything like that.
I could say that it's not a wreck, it's something that looks very odd. Then we start measuring it and saw that it's nearly 60 meters in diameter.
It was perfect round and like a mark in the at the bottom. Remember, I said to all the crew members that be quiet about this, don't say anything. So we know what it is.
After returning to Stockholm, the crew studies the images for weeks, but they just can't figure out what the anomaly actually is. After many days and nights spent pondering, Dennis looks in another direction for help. He wants to go public with the images.
Peter said to me, "Okay, you do whatever you do." I called the newspaper in Sweden. That was the start of a new life.
Buckle up, Star Wars nerds. You're gonna like this one.
What can only be described as the wreckage of a crashed spaceship.
It just exploded.
We kind of locked up the Pandora box.
They came across something unusual.
So is it really an intergalactic spacecraft?
The news spreads rapidly amongst both scientists and laymen all over the world.
this whole anomaly is really intriguing, and I must say, I really can't say what it is.
At first, one wouldn't have an explanation for what this actually could be. It definitely requires more work.
The telephone is ringing all the time. Radio station, TV channels.
It was from the whole world.
300,000 visitors per day on the web page.
You're sitting with a computer and you just bing, 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 bing. I get like 50,000 mails.
But it didn't have the desired effect Peter and Dennis had hoped for.
There have been many theories. We have sects telling us not to go there because it might be a trap, that if we touch it, it will explode and kill all the people in the world, and even that it might be a porthole down to hell. So the theories has been many and creative, but no one has came up with an explanation. Everything is just speculations.
After a year of analyzing, researching, and sponsor hunting, it's finally time to head out to the mysterious object. The expedition requires state-of-the-art technology, staff, and mountains of supplies, which is very costly. The budget is set to 120,000 euros. Every day has a price tag of more than 20,000 euros, which means they have less than a week to succeed. Besides Peter and Dennis, the team is made up of experienced professional divers, technical operators, and the ship's crew, led by Captain Thomas.
Hörru, varför står de här förbannade kaffekopparna?
Det där är
min, det där är din. Nej, jag, det här är inte min, den här är halvfull. Det är garanterat inte min.
Ja, det är inte min.
I'm in charge of everything. It's my responsibility to have a safe ship and for all members board.
Peter! Ni behöver inte skrika, tack.
Va?
Du behöver inte skrika idag.
Varför då?
Inte för jag vill vara tjatig, men vad fan i värmen?
The captain is the boss, and he knows what he's doing.
Kan någon jävel slå på den där så jag slipper frysa hela helvetet? Ja.
And of course you get annoyed when he coming down screaming at you, but of course he's right.
Och bort och hämta biljäveln och koppla ihop skiten och hit med grejerna. Det blir så förbannat.
The media have also found their way to the docks and are conducting the final interviews before Ocean X team leaves the mainland behind them.
And what do you think you find?
I'm very excited, but at the same time I'm quite anxious because a lot of people are watching this. There's no time for screw-ups now.
When it's finally time to cast off, disturbing weather reports begin to come in. There's a storm raging at sea, which could delay the team for several days, jeopardizing their already tight schedule. The Ancilus is moving slowly through the great archipelago towards the open sea, allowing the storm time to pass. But in the morning, things have become even worse. The bad news troubled Captain Thomas. Dennis and Peter gather round to hear the verdict.
Ja, vi går inte till sjös nu. Det är lite för hårt väder. Och det blir ett jävla guppande. Så att vänta så avta imorgon och gå ut då.
Morgon bitti.
Så blir det.
Okay.
Ja, då kör vi så. Bra, tack för det.
Captain Thomas decides to wait overnight, sheltered by the surrounding islands.
I am worried. Every day is all about money. It's ticking, and the clock is going, and the money is just going away.
Every hour we spend here is another loss on the object. That means less chance to find out what it is.
There are many ideas about what the anomaly might be. The most common theories that come from people around the world can be divided into three main categories: extraterrestrial, man-made, or natural phenomena. The idea of intelligent life forms existing somewhere in the universe is not inconceivable. Whether there have been visits from other civilizations or not is an intriguing belief. The association with a flying saucer is obvious when looking at the smooth, round shapes of the anomaly. The following morning, weather conditions are excellent. Sunshine and soft breezes mean that the team can finally head out to the open sea and start the expedition. Everyone's in high spirits, even Captain Thomas.
Calm and nice weather, everything fine as hell.
The feeling is quite relieved.
It's a great feeling. I love this situation.
Now we'll have a meeting and inform the entire crew what will happen and what we're going to do within the next 24 hours.
The first challenge we have is to find the object again. And I know that that's always a problem, but we have very sophisticated equipment now, so it shouldn't be any problem.
The team scans the seabed with the help of two instruments. One is the so-called multi-beam, which creates detailed three-dimensional images of the ocean floor. The multi-beam is an advanced tool and covers relatively small areas, which later can be put together to create a bigger and detailed composite image. To search much larger areas, the team uses a side-scan sonar, known as the FISH. It creates a two-dimensional image of the seabed, a vital necessity in order to locate the object again. Due to prevailing currents and winds, the coordinates taken the year before are not 100% accurate. Peter must calculate an offset. Therefore, the search area is spread over 1.16 square miles. If they're lucky, they can find the object quickly, but it may also take several hours.
The object is 60 meters in diameter, and we're at open sea. And even if 60 meters sounds a lot, it's like finding a needle in the haystack.
The anomaly lies in international waters, and other nations' authorities around the Baltic Sea have shown an interest in the object. Therefore, the coordinates have been kept secret. Being under surveillance is not a risk worth taking.
We have informed the entire crew that they had to turn off all kind of tracking device in their phones, but I think it's impossible to protect ourselves from being tracked.
Even if strict radio silence is observed on board, it looks like the Ancilus has got company.
Suddenly we saw in the distance that this must be some kind of Navy ship heading directly on us.
85 miles. Big.
Turned out to be a Navy ship, and actually a Swedish one. And it shouldn't be lurking around in those waters.
It's like sänkt i fart, det var snäll och jävlig var något. Tack för honom, lilla fan.
They just stopped and were laying there, and we were going in a search pattern, and they were in our way. But then they went off, heading north.
As the corvette disappears into the distance, the crew focus on scanning the ocean floor again, aware now that they're not alone. The search has been going on for several hours when night falls. Most of the crew have gone to bed, and Peter and Dennis take the first night shift. Night turns into day without any sign of the object. When suddenly...
We have lost our side-scan sonar.
And it's only the drum standing on off deck, and the rest is on the bottom right now.
In situations like this, Peter needs to make a critical decision, and he has to make it fast.
To lose the Seiskan sonar means that it will take a much longer time to search the area, because with the multi-beam we don't have the width, so we will lose a lot of time. And time is money.
Peter faces three alternatives. Either they keep searching using only the multi-beam, or they head back to Stockholm to get a new side scan sonar. Both of these alternatives will cost time and money. The third alternative is to try and retrieve the sonar in order to resume the search as quickly as possible.
The chances to find it on the bottom are very, very small. And we don't know either if it's still working or not. If we take the wrong decision, we might lose the entire project.
Finally, Peter decides on the third alternative. The Ancilus arrives at the position where the equipment is believed to be lost. The fish is too small for the multi-beam to locate, so they have to use a remote-operated underwater vehicle, also known as an ROV.
We have a 200-meter cable on the Seiskan sonar, so we hope it will be on like a line on the bottom.
The ROV has a small grabber arm that Floris, the operator, hopes to use to reel in the fish. But first, they have to find the cable, and time is ticking away.
Finding the cable is one thing. Grabbing the cable with the ROV is another thing, because the bottom is very, very soft and the visibility is gone directly as soon as the ROV getting close to the bottom. So even if we find the cable, it might be gone in a second.
Luck is on their side and the cable is found almost immediately. Now they have to focus on grabbing the cable in zero visibility. Floris relies on his gut instinct and pure skill to succeed.
Fisken går ju ner och sen så kommer ju den efteråt då liksom. Oj.
Jag tror du greppar den.
Så är det öppnar. Den är bakom fram den här. Ja, den har vi. Tror jag är den. Eller bara komma iväg.
Jajamän, snyggt jobbat.
Floris is quite a young guy, so I guess he's playing some computer games, but he's natural when it comes to driving an ROV. I mean, he's a pilot from the beginning as well, so I think he has it in his veins.
Yeah, it turned out good. Took about 15 minutes to find it, so went quite fast.
They're still facing two critical issues. Can the fish be fixed? And if so, how long will it take?
I was a little worried. Not so little. Quite much. But now we have found it.
It has been a long night. It will be a long day before we can continue. So we have to start work.
After hours of repairing, the crew finally managed to mend the fish. But this entire side operation has cost them nearly 6 hours. Inevitably, this lowers the onboard morale.
Well, we have been searching now for 18 hours, but we had a break for 6 hours when we had the side scan fish on the bottom. But we have been working for 12 hours, effectively. And we saw a shadow a few moments ago, so we will go back and have a look again. So maybe we'll find it in a couple of minutes.
But day turns into night again, and still no trace of the anomaly. The whole team is resting except for the divers Stefan and first mate Kai, who are working the night shift. Kai is steering the boat and Stefan is carefully tracking the monitors.
Of course, we're getting frustrated when we can't have the exact spot where the object is.
This is actually very interesting, and I think we found it. This is exactly what we're looking for. This is obviously a different angle from what we've seen before. Yes. So mark this spot.
After more than 48 hours of searching, they have finally found the object.
The same size as the object we have seen last year, and it's round.
The mood is much better now than before. I mean, we had problems with a lot of things, but now we're on the run again.
Then we drop the anchor.
Now they must proceed with extreme caution, since they don't know what lies beneath them.
It's something hard down there, that's for sure. Some kind of gas well. Can it be an oil well? Can it be a meteorite? If 95% of our fans were right that there is an alien spacecraft down there, of course that would be a goal, if it's not lethal then.
I'm very confused. To tell the truth, I think we can dismiss a lot of theories as soon as we have the first glimpse of the object.
But before even considering diving for the object, they have to get a clear picture of the environment below the surface and calculate the risks. They put the ROV to work.
I just put a normal diving gauge on the ROV to be able to measure the temperature and the depth of all the operation of the ROV. That is very good for us to know when we are planning our dives in the future.
Nothing is left to chance. Besides the temperature and depth, the ROV will examine the current surrounding the object and retrieve material from the bottom that can be analyzed.
I mean, this can be dangerous. We have no clue what it can be down there. Chemicals or mechanical things, poison of some kind. We have to know if there's any risk down there before we send down the divers.
Should it fail? Going strong. 60.
The anomaly rests at 90 meters, that's 300 feet below the surface. At these depths, the visibility can be very restricted, especially when soft bottom sediments are stirred up by the ROV. Therefore, the team uses its sonar system to get the first close-up images of the object.
It's 90 degrees vinkel på den här grejen.
Down in the depths, the ROV also manages to capture a clear and distinct close-up image of the object's surface.
Ja,
en helt rak. Helt rak kant.
Ja.
Det är för fan
betong. Det ser fan ut så.
Det gör det verkligen.
Det är betong.
Som betong.
Vad i helvete?
Ja, det.
Men du, dykaren, Stefan, kan det vara, kan berg se ut sådär?
Det kan ju inte vara betong, men det kan ju vara...
Men sandsten kan se ut sådär.
Ja.
Oh, det brukar inte finnas här.
Nej, inte så här.
Too early to say now, but it's something, for sure. It is. It looks like a man-made.
The man-made theory is also very common amongst the OceanX team's followers. Some people refer back to the mythical underwater city of Atlantis. Others think it's a megalith, a sort of submerged Stonehenge. There are other findings around the world that are difficult to explain, like the Yonaguni, for instance, outside Japan, an enormous underwater structure that looks man-made. Other theories concern modern man-made structures, like the Russian warship Novgorod, built in the late 1800s, or even the mysterious Nazi flying saucer Honeybu. Some people think that it might be the concrete foundation of a lighthouse, but they are normally situated in shallower waters. Others think of giant cable drums, except that the biggest known drums barely reach half the size of the Baltic anomaly. The ROV is coming back up, so the team can calculate the diving risk. Since they still don't know what the object is, all possible precautionary action is being taken.
It's okay.
With sufficient information about the underwater environment and no lethal radiation readings, the team begin planning and preparing for the first dive.
I'm not going to dive on this expedition myself. My job is to supervise the operation. It's my planning, and in the end, if something happens to them, it's my neck. Now we're not really know what we're facing. So, of course, I am a bit anxious about it.
The dive, which will be about 2 hours in duration, takes place in the cold Baltic waters, which normally are around 6 or 7 degrees Celsius. But all of a sudden, the readings show that the temperature right on top of the object has drastically dropped below zero.
Just recently discovered that it's minus 1 degree Celsius, which is actually below the freezing point. And that's actually very surprising.
When diving, one must always work with at least one other person so that they can assist each other in case of something goes wrong. Stefan will be diving with his partner, Frederick, who has planned the whole operation.
He is meticulous in his planning. I mean, he's the person who knows that the devil is in the details. He plans and plans and think over the plans, and then he does a replan. I would say without Frederick, I wouldn't be able to do these dives.
Deep sea diving is incredibly risky and puts great demands on the human body and equipment. Already at 20 meters depth, a diver is at risk from nitrogen narcosis. The symptoms are similar to being under the influence of alcohol, with impaired judgment and poor concentration. At 60 meters, the high pressure makes the oxygen content in normal air poisonous, which can be fatal. To remedy this, the diver breathes a mixture that lowers the oxygen and nitrogen levels with the help of helium. The deeper and longer the diver is down, the slower the ascent, which means having to pause several times on the way up. Otherwise, the nitrogen expands, creating bubbles in the blood system. This gives the diver decompression sickness, also known as the bends.
If you, by any chance, would get decompression sickness, there is a way to rescue yourself from it anyway, and that's to go to a recompression chamber. But here, we are way out in the Baltic Sea, and we have no recompression chamber. So if anything happens, we're smoked.
While they are down, there will be a third diver up top. His function is to be a rescue diver.
Well, I will be assisting the divers. If there's any problems with the diving, they will send up a buoy, and we will see where they are, and we will go there, and I will go down to assist them if there's any trouble.
They're getting close to the descent, but the Ancilus is engulfed by fog, which reduces the divers' safety levels considerably.
Jag vill inte vara en partypooper, men ni ser inga bojar om ni skjuter det nu, eller?
Då tappar vi inte bort uppstyrningslinan helt enkelt.
Peter has to make the most difficult decision of his life. Because of their tight schedule, they don't have time to wait for the fog to disperse. So either they abort the entire mission, or they continue under dangerous conditions.
With the fog, we have two alternatives. One is that we wait for the fog to disappear, but we don't know how long that will take. Two is that we dive anyway, but if the divers run into problem, then we are in deep shit. But we have taken the decision that they will dive anyway.
When you descend in the Baltic Sea, in the first couple of meters, there is daylight. And the deeper you go, the darker it gets. So at 20 meters of depth, there is almost no light at all. At 40, 50 meters, it's pitch black. And at 90 meters, it's like a black hole. It's just nothing.
During the descent, the fog has become even thicker. Peter has second thoughts about his decision to let them dive.
During a dive to 90 meters under these conditions, and something happens to the divers, they are beyond all kind of rescue. They can't go directly to the surface, because if they do, they die. And on top of this, we don't know what we will find down there.
When the divers finally reach 90 meters, they tie a lifeline to the anchor so that they can find their way back to the ascent line. Now, Stefan and Fredrik have only 10 minutes left before they must begin their demanding ascent.
Down, we had the sonar pictures in our mind, and a thing to remember is that when you see a sonar picture, that's actually 60 meters in diameter, and when we got down in pitch black water, you only see sort of 1 meter ahead of you. So when we see the anomaly underwater, it is nothing like the sonar picture. We have no clue what it is. Of course, the question starts to grow in your mind. When we swam over it, it looked like concrete or cement. And when we touched it, it turned black. What I've seen that it looks somewhere like this is when you have burned plastic or anything that's burnt or melted, and that was very mysterious for us.
The 10 minutes that Stefan and Fredrik had left on the object are already up, and the slow but dangerous ascent begins.
The longer we stay down there, the longer it will take to get back to the surface. 10 minutes at 90 meters of depth, it will take around 90 minutes to get back to the surface.
De är på 15 meter nu och har 57 minuter kvar till ytan.
You're anxious and you're nervous standing up there, not knowing if it has worked well for them or not. Just waiting for an emergency buoy popping up somewhere, and then you have a really stressful situation trying to save the divers.
Mm-hmm.
jobbat.
When you get back to the surface and you stand on the boat's deck, everything just releases in you. All the adrenaline that kept you alive, that kept you in work, just disappears. And of course, I might look a little sad, and that's just because I've been so tensed for 2 hours.
Var det så kallt?
Alltså super. Jag har aldrig varit med om en liknande i temperatur.
Det är så jävla kallt.
Du gick fram till objektet.
Alltså vi är ju på objektet. Alltså när vi dyker.
Gick du på kanterna också?
Ja. Kanterna.
Var det som jag hade ritat?
Ja,
ungefär.
Ja.
Är det rakt det?
Alltså det här är kanten. Ja. Det ligger dyker. Alltså är det liksom så saker som går ut så här, som att det kanterna är liksom som att de är gjutna ut så här.
Kan det vara magma som har kommit ut och kylts ner av havet
och här det ligger helt plötsligt så här stenformationer, ser du? Så här, stenar som ligger som i en ring.
Allvarligt, som en häxring alltså.
Ja. De bara ligger jätteformade så här, som att någon har lagt upp dem så här.
The most peculiar thing or the strangest thing was a hole. It was like a circle, 2 or 3 meters in width, and like a frame around it. I mean, like a square frame and a circular hole, and that's kind of weird.
It's a magic moment in my head. I've been waiting for this for long time to see these pictures. Yeah, my heart is ticking quite fast.
You see what you believe is a rock, and when you look closer, it is more similar to concrete.
It's like it's symmetric to be a regular
yeah,
rock.
And it's like somebody molded it before it actually turned into stone. The amazing thing here is that you don't get any answers. You just get more questions. I don't have a lot of ideas of what it can be. I try to take photos, documentation, collect samples, and I let the scientists come up with the ideas of what it can be. So I don't really have a clue. It's just too big of a question mark for me. That was probably the most important dive I've ever done in my life, and I've done maybe 6,000 dives in my life. I would dive for an expert to tell me what I've seen.
Helt otroligt.
After a dive like this, Stefan and Fredrik have to spend about 12 hours on the surface before it's safe to go back down again. Therefore, they've run out of time. So early next morning, the crew weighs anchor and the ship heads back to dry land again.
We didn't get so many dives as we wanted to. And another big problem is that the multi-beam data, which creates the 3D image of the bottom, is incomplete. We have spent a lot of money on it, and it was very important for this expedition. But the positive thing is that we have brought some samples up, so I hope it will be enough for some experts to give us some answers.
It's a strange stone, it's black. There can be a natural reason for that. It looks like it burned. But why? I don't know.
The last of the three most common theories is that the anomaly is a natural phenomenon. Either a structure caused perhaps by a gas pocket or a volcano throwing up lava, which consequently created the mystical anomaly. And there are also several theories claiming the anomaly to be a meteorite. Meteors are sighted every now and then, and there are many well-known craters around the world. Could this explain the weird shapes and black stones that is the anomaly? The time has finally come to get some answers. Peter and Dennis start off with a meeting with Andreas Olsson, an expert in underwater archaeology.
To me, it looks like I wouldn't perhaps call it a wall or that it's something you can walk in. But it's definitely a very sharp edge, and I haven't seen this before. And when I just look at it now, it definitely looks like man-made.
Very interesting.
It's looked man-made in my eyes, but he's the knowing guy, scientist. And when he says things like that, I'm just.
If it is man-made, it must be carved out from the cliff itself, because all you see there is a hard surface. It's a mineral or something.
My immediate reaction was that this is some kind of concrete construction, something modern. I would think 20th century or perhaps late 19th century. But it definitely, from the imagery, it looks like it could be man-made.
But to me, it looks like the when you look at that sharp line, it has a very different density.
Yeah.
And it almost looks like it's like steel or something, because it's a much harder echo. Don't you agree?
Yeah, I do.
You have to deal with very many different kinds of expert hands to get a full picture.
Yeah, for sure. That's the next step.
So the regular shape means the object could be man-made. But if that's the case, where do the burnt-looking stones come from? Could it perhaps be explained by volcanism in the Baltic Basin? Marine geologist Martin Jacobson at Stockholm University might have the answer.
That would certainly be extremely interesting, because that would mean we have volcanisms at a time where I wouldn't expect it at all. It is a very exciting result purely scientifically that I would be interested in to even go further and look into.
If the burnt stones are not from the Baltic Basin, were they heated somewhere else? Like, for example, the outer atmosphere, meaning that the anomaly would be a huge meteorite resting in the depths.
We have very nice example of meteorite impacts in Sweden, but it would probably be a bigger imprint in the bedrock geology around, and we would have seen that in maps and anomalies before. So it doesn't point to that to me.
Peter and Dennis need more answers. They meet the geologist Volker Brückert, who has more than 30 years of experience with rocks. He has examined the material and is ready to give his opinion on how the rocks were created.
All right, so if you look at the side that I sort of smacked clean, you see it has very fine crystals that indicate that we had a molten rock, and the molten rock chilled very rapidly, and therefore the crystals didn't have time to grow. And therefore, that's how we identify a volcanic rock. So I don't know why you find a volcanic rock in the middle of the northern Baltic. My best interpretation is that glaciers have transported it there.
So it's official. The rock is volcanic, which might have been transported there by glaciers. But how can the anomaly's weird shapes be explained? Peter and Dennis show Volker the video material, hoping it would reveal more clues.
Och där har du flera stycken utav dem. Mm-hmm. Och det är bara uppe på föremålet vi har här.
Jag har ju inte sett en hylla. Det ser verkligen ut som om någon skulle ha gått.
Det ser ut som det.
Precis.
Could the shapes be explained by something lying beneath the volcanic rock surface?
It looks like a crust.
Yeah.
It looks like a thick crust.
Yeah. We have this black material shining through the cracks.
What do you mean? But that could just be the mud that's sort of.
No, this is not mud.
Oh, okay.
So that's a
hard surface here. One would have to see whether the material that's really underneath is the same as the one that's on top. So what I really would need to look at this more closely is a sample directly from your object. The surfaces can be deceiving and don't really say what the interior of the rock looks like.
So the big questions right now are, did the glaciers transport it there? And what lies beneath?
Well, from my point of view, it could almost be Millennium Falcon right now. I think it's important to have more information before we can pursue any theory. I have to be very open.
We have in Sweden, for example, everything has been overridden by the ice and can look very, very machine-made or don't really look realistic. But you can never say anything with 100% certainty.
Geologists tend to explain this as part of a geologic phenomenon, and perhaps a biologist would explain it according to his or her discipline. So we must have many disciplines. We must see this from many point of views. We must create, a holistic picture of this in order to find what it is, actually.
Keeping an open mind, could it in fact be some sort of alien vessel resting beneath the stone crust? Klaus Swan, a renowned journalist and chairman of UFO Sweden, gives his opinion.
Our oceans are not explored at all, really. I mean, it's a space in itself. So there are, of course, surprises. There could be things, of course, that maybe visited us for hundreds and thousands of years are still left down there. That would be quite easy to see. I mean, it would be quite easy to drill your way down and see if there is anything metallic underneath the stone. Today is only speculation, but it triggers our imagination and we must try to find the solution, of course.
So there's only one thing left to do. Peter and Dennis have to head out to sea again in order to get the final answers.
To be able to find out what's inside the object, we have to do a core drilling, and that's a huge operation. So we're talking millions of euros.
When Peter and Dennis began to prepare for another expedition, what wasn't supposed to happen, happened. Rumors and speculation begin to surface, saying the object is nothing but a pile of rocks.
Yeah, I get pissed off. I mean, wake up this morning and see this shit from Fox News. And they're writing about that we have found a rock, and the information comes from Sweden. People think they're right now. That's the sad thing. It's harder for us now to convince companies to get into this. When Fox do this, it's pissing me off, yeah.
Several months pass, and these rumors harden into a global belief. But Dennis refuses to give up his search for the truth.
We have not been any luck with the sponsors. We have not found any sponsors. We must find other things to get money into the project.
In an act of desperation, Dennis begins selling off branded merchandise in order to scrape together enough money for a new expedition.
It had been a long time, but lots of struggling. There's a kind of frustration in me. To work with this, you must have patience. It's all about patience here.
Their attempts to finance the project begin to provoke some people who think Peter and Dennis are trying to make money out of nothing. Even some of the fans who were once enthusiastic have lost faith in them. Peter and Dennis have become a laughingstock.
Quickly, Peter, put on your dive suit.
I don't have a dive suit. We're broke, remember?
The Baltic Sea anomaly.
The search for the anomaly continues. Yadda, 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 whatever.
Peter is disheartened and distances himself further and further away from the project. Dennis, on the other hand, keeps on fighting, but now it's to clear their names.
We are no hoax. We are treasure hunters. Why should we lie about this?
Even Dennis has to draw the line when he, and above all his family, begin to receive intimidating messages.
You notice the dark night, Mr. Osberg. The dark death. Your health. It's good that you don't dive in winter times. So many accidents happen then. Say hello to your little kids. They are so sweet. Perhaps I meet them in the kindergarten. What have I done to deserve this? He's fretting me and my kids.
But Dennis's struggle is also inspiring. Every now and then, they still receive well wishes and kind support from fans who find Peter's and Dennis' work important.
As ministers are not scientific, they're also, in the same time, not trustable to the society. It would be really sad if we actually have something there at the bottom. Think about if that were abandoned just because we have some norms in society that says there are no miracles, there are no such things. I think that would be a scandal almost if we don't go there and look at what it is actually.
One of their enthusiastic followers has spent a couple of months trying to restore the corrupted data from the multibeam. After much hard work, he's been able to put together new, unique images that reveal the object and a large part of the surrounding area. As a last-ditch effort, Peter and Dennis, together with Stefan the diver, come together to see if they can shed some light upon the mystery.
This is going to be very interesting for me to see a bigger view, to take a step back, actually two steps back, and see the whole picture.
What we'll see is very interesting because we have just seen it as a 2D side scan sonar image. But now we will have a flyby through the area, and it's quite amazing.
Titta här.
The multi-beam interpretation shows something absolutely astonishing. 1,500 meters south of the object, there's a small underwater mountain divided by a canyon. Leading off of this underwater feature is a ridge that runs all the way up to the object.
Man får ju lite rysningar när man ser de här bilderna.
The 3D image also shows another ridge heading towards a second anomaly. When studying the side scan image, the resemblance to the first anomaly is striking, which could mean that they are in some way connected.
Well, we have two curved shaped endings of it. And if we take the disturbances away, we will have a straight line, at least on this side. The two arches makes it look like maybe not natural. This second anomaly might be the most interesting.
Det där har jag ingen aning. Det där skulle ju vara intressant att åka dit och dyka där.
It actually looks like something has hit the mountain, but I don't think it is like that. I think it is a coincidence, but I don't know.
Maybe I've worked with this too long now. Maybe I'm crazy. But in my eyes, I see a crash site. Perhaps I will never find out. And I had to live with that. But one thing is for sure, I will never stop thinking about it.
I'm divided in two about an answer. It might be a very boring answer, and maybe I can live without that. Or the answer will surprise me. And in that case, I'm looking forward to it.